is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of Locked On Clippers. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Wednesday, January 25th, 2017. It's our third episode of the week. We're here Mondays through Fridays. So obviously the news of the day, what we're talking about, is the Clippers lost last night in Philadelphia. And it was a bad one. It's not a good loss. You'd say almost that it's like the worst loss of the season, or one of the worst losses of the season. The Clippers have had so many bad losses this year. If you just look at their record against teams that are under 500, the Clippers have lost 9 games to teams that are under 500. Every team, top of the West, Golden State, San Antonio, Houston, Utah, OKC, Memphis, all these teams, no one has more losses against bad teams than the Clippers do. Go over to the East, the legitimate teams in the East, not the mediocre teams, but like Cleveland, Toronto, Boston, 4-5-5 against teams under 500. The Clippers have as many losses to teams under 500 as Golden State, San Antonio, and Houston combined. 9 games against teams that are under 500. So, yeah, this loss sucked, but it's almost like par for the course. They keep on losing to bad teams. It started even early in the year. Their first real struggle, they started 14-2, and then they lost a bad game to Detroit, who's currently under 500. They lost 2 games to Indiana, who's 500 right now. They lost a game to Brooklyn, who's the worst team in the NBA. It never stopped. And then you want to forgive some of the losses when they were injured. Like, yeah, they lost to Dallas, but Chris Paul and Blake Griffin were both out. They lost to the Lakers. Chris Paul and Blake Griffin were both out. Okay, but you go back to like that Detroit game. They were 14-2 going into that game and just laid an egg. That Brooklyn game that they lost in double overtime. And then a game like tonight where they had a 20-point lead. You can try to make all the excuses in the world, really. But when you have a 20-point lead in the second half, it's hard to say, we were just outmatched. In a lot of those games, you could say the Clippers were just outmatched because they lose, they maybe have like a 6 or 8-point lead at some point because they're playing scrappy basketball and they're staying in the game. But they never blew teams out and then blew giant leads. It was always relatively, most games have 8 or 10-point swings. But for you to go from up 20 to losing by double digits in the second half, it wasn't even like a big first quarter lead that ended up being meaningless. They built a lead that got up to 20 points in the second half. They lost by 11. And the problem is like twofold, because on one hand, you want to say, well, the offense isn't really an issue because they scored 110 points. The bigger issue is that defensively, they let up 121. The only quarter that Philadelphia didn't score 30 points in was the first. After that, 32. 30, 32. And the scoring was balanced. So this isn't a case of like when the Clippers lost to Minnesota, it was largely because Karl Anthony Towns went ballistic for 37 points. Philadelphia played a 10-man rotation. They scored 121 points, and no one scored more than 20. No one scored 20. The highest was Nerlens Noel with 19. Rashawn Holmes had 18. Dario Šarić with 16. Covington with 14. Henderson 10. Ilyasova 10. McConnell 9. Rodriguez 9. Stauskas 8. Luulu 7. They got contributions from all 10 guys. It was like an all-around failure from the Clippers' defense. It wasn't like, oh man, Jamal's getting torched by so-and-so, or this guy can't miss a shot. It was just all around. They just played a good basketball game. The Clippers' defense was abysmal. And part of that, when you look at it, has to, I think, cycle back to the Clippers' offense and the fact that the Clippers had 17 turnovers compared to only 5 for Philadelphia. I think it was 8 turnovers by the Clippers to 1 by Philadelphia at halftime. And I'm not sure exactly where it ended because there could always have been a couple more. Oh, here it is. Yeah. The Clippers let up 36 points off of turnovers. 36 points. And they only scored 8 off of turnovers. So that's a 28-point swing. If the Clippers could have just played that category even, they win this game by 17 instead of losing it by 11. But they got blown out in that category. And then what's a little scary is that on the offensive end, the Clippers weren't necessarily that great or competent, as evidenced by those crazy turnover numbers. It was largely that they hit threes. The Clippers were 18 of 34 from deep tonight, which is good for 53%, which is amazing. It's a great shooting night. It's a hot night. But you'd actually probably want to score more than 110 points if you're going to have your best shooting night of the season. And for the Clippers, you might expect them to miss a few more shots than that. And all of a sudden, if they shoot a normal percentage, what you'd expect from them, this is a huge blowout instead of just an 11-point loss. And so now you start thinking the defense and the offense are both insufficient. And part of that, you have an off night defensively. You have a sloppy night offensively. You turn the ball over. It wasn't helped by the fact that Blake Griffin was incredibly rusty. Blake had 6 turnovers, which is obviously a huge part of that 17-turnover total. But I think, to a large extent, it points towards bigger problems with the team going forward without Chris Paul, namely something that I've kind of been harping on, which is that Austin Rivers isn't a point guard. The team is better when Austin is playing on the wing, and Austin's better when Austin is playing on the wing. And Raymond Felton is okay, but he's only okay. He only played 17 minutes tonight. That means that 17 minutes, Raymond Felton's playing point guard. 31 minutes of the game, Austin Rivers is your point guard. 31 minutes of the game, you're playing basketball without a point guard. And Blake Griffin can handle a lot of those duties. He's a great distributor. He's a great passer. But he can't bring the ball up every time. And when you're asking a guy who's just coming back from knee surgery to be the guy that you're running your offense through every possession, yeah, he's going to get 6 turnovers. He's rusty as hell. And he had, I think there were a lot of encouraging signs from Blake tonight, even though he didn't have a great game. 3 of 11 from the field and 6 turnovers kind of undoes what looks like a pretty encouraging 12-point, 11-rebound, 5-assist stat line. But he looked active. He looked spry. It's all good potentially going forward for Blake Griffin as he shakes off the rust and starts making his mid-range shots a little more, starts being a little better with the basketball, not turning it over. But is he still going to be your every possession point guard? Wouldn't you rather have a capable point guard and let Blake play his normal game, maybe with a little bit of an enhanced role? Maybe he's distributing a little more than normal because you don't have the best passing point guard in the NBA anymore. You've just got another good point guard, like a Raymond Felton level guy. Blake is going to create more with Raymond Felton on the floor, but you're still not forcing him to be your point guard. Because Blake isn't a point guard. He's a point forward. And he can play point forward and be successful, but he is not a point guard. And it's the same thing with Austin Rivers. He's a shooting guard, combo guard. He can play point in a pinch. He can bring the ball up. He can run a fast break. He can run a pick and roll, but he's not great at it. And he can't, but he can't run a team. He doesn't run a team well. And that's not, you know, bemoaning Austin Rivers' incompetence. I think he's a really good shooting guard. He's good at getting the ball on the weak side and attacking. He gets great dribble penetration. His three-point shot is the best it's been in his career. There's nothing wrong with him not being a point guard, but he's not a point guard. And when you're playing a weird mashup of players out of position and asking a shooting guard who really struggles at point guard and a power forward who's a good creator but a power forward, when you're asking these guys to basically split your point guard duties and play with three guys in Redick, Mbamute, and Jordan who don't dribble the basketball, yeah, your offense is going to struggle. You're going to turn the ball over a lot. And they did. I still think the Clippers need help at point guard with Chris Paul out. You know, this is something that I've been saying on the podcast. It's something that I've written about. I think they need help at point guard with Chris Paul out. You know, it's an unclear path forward with, obviously, you know, any sort of trade carries a bunch of risk in it because you're sending out salary. You know, you don't want to trade Jamal. When you trade Jamal Crawford, you're talking about huge salary, $14 million coming back for a guy who's a fill-in. If you were to trade Wesley Johnson, then you're talking about trading one of your options at forward where you aren't super deep for another option at guard where the Clippers are deep when they're healthy, having Paul, Redick, Felton, Rivers, Crawford. Whoever comes in isn't going to be higher than number 6 on the pecking order for guards. They would just be number 3 for point guards, which is what the Clippers need. But you don't want to be moving a guy who's one of your potentially playoff rotation backup forwards for a guy who's going to be riding the bench at guard. So it's a hard decision to make. You look at free agency, you know, maybe you cut Allen Anderson and add a guy, but you have to question the quality of the guys that you're getting in free agency. Maybe a guy like Xavier Munford, who the Clippers had in camp, who was okay for Memphis last year in limited minutes playing as an injury fill-in, but I don't know if that's a guy you want to stake 25 games of backup point guard duties on. I don't know, is Mario Chalmers healthy? Is Norris Cole healthy? Can those guys contribute on a team where they have to be the point guard? Because a lot of times in Miami, they were playing with LeBron or Wade. And the offense was being run through LeBron and Wade, and those guys were really more spot-up shooters. So you hesitate to bring them in to be a floor general and run the team. There's Shane Larkin, who was a great scorer in Brooklyn, but he struggled seeing the whole court. He was undersized. He over-penetrates on pick and rolls. It's a liability. But he might be able to help this team. He definitely helped this team more than Allen Anderson is right now, because Allen Anderson can't get on the court. And frankly, I was as excited as anyone when the Clippers signed Allen Anderson. I was begging them to sign him a month before they did. But right now, he's not helping the team. If he can't get on the floor, he's the lowest guy in the pecking order. Why not get a point guard? Think about it. If you were to cut Allen Anderson today and sign a point guard, who's going to contribute more quality minutes? A replacement point guard in the next 20 games or Allen Anderson in the last 47? Because Allen Anderson really hasn't contributed maybe more than 40 or 50 quality minutes in the last 47 games. If you sign a point guard, he's going to be contributing, you know, 12 to 16 quality minutes a night for the next 20 games. That's huge compared to what you're getting from that roster spot in Allen Anderson right now. So I think the Clippers still need to make a move. I've been saying this. I mean, it's only been a few games since Chris Paul went out, but it's been apparent to me that they need help. They need help at point guard. Now, one thing that I think is important to note from this game is that Jamal Crawford had a great individual night. He had 27 points, 9 of 14 from the field, 6 of 9 from deep. You know, this is kind of following up on an abysmal month for Jamal, but he did have a nice stretch in the fourth quarter of their last game against Atlanta. He scored 8 points in a row, 4 straight possessions. He got a bucket. But Jamal Crawford made 6 threes last night in Philadelphia. He made 5 in the first 23 days of January. 10 games so far in January, he had made 5 threes. In Philadelphia, he made 6. In January, Jamal Crawford only had 2 games where he shot 50% from the field. January 4th, against Memphis, where he had was probably one of his last good games. And January 11th against Orlando, where he was 3 of 5 and had 5 turnovers. He was 9 of 14 tonight. Now, you can't expect Jamal Crawford to be 9 of 14 every night, but I think after the month that he's turned in, the law of averages owes him a bunch of 9 of 14 nights. And it's going to be hard for him to save his season-long efficiency just because of how far down his numbers went to 38.6% from the field and 30.2% from deep heading into tonight's game, which that's just awful. Those are just awful numbers. That's his, you know, if the season ended like this, it would be his worst three-point shooting season ever and his worst field goal shooting season since his rookie year. His rookie year was worse. Every year since then has been better than had. So that hopefully, you know, he gets a little bit of a resurgence enough to make it not the worst year of his career, which is what it was really starting to shape up like. But we'll see. You know, last year when Blake went out, Jamal seemed to have timely performances, and he helped the Clippers win basketball games. And one thing that I did think about today while looking back through this horrible stretch that Jamal has is I'm not sure how many basketball games he cost them by sucking. The Minnesota game, you lose by 3, Jamal goes 3 of 14. Yeah, he cost you that game. And the New Orleans game on December 28th, you lose by 4, Jamal was 3 of 15. He probably cost you that game. But you look at the rest of these games, you lose by 2 to Dallas, but he's 10 of 16. You lose by 9 to the Lakers, he's 7 of 17. You lose by 4 to the Nuggets, but he's 11 of 23. Those losses can't go on him. The Houston and OKC blowouts can't go on him. The Denver blowout can't go on him. Sure, he contributed, but that's not a game where you say Jamal Crawford playing poorly moved the needle and lost you the game. And now this Philadelphia loss, you can't pin on him because he had a great individual game tonight. So you look at it, he maybe cost the Clippers 2 games in this slump. They've lost 9 since December 23rd, when Chris Paul went out with the first hamstring injury. They've lost 9 games since December 23rd, running through last night against Philadelphia. So Jamal Crawford maybe contributed to 2 of those 9 losses. And that's not awful. The team, a lot of his bad games, the team was able to win anyway. They beat Miami by 12 when he shot 1 of 12 from the field. They beat Sacramento by 8 when he was 4 of 13. They beat the Lakers by 16 when Jamal was 1 of 9. They blew out OKC by 22 when Jamal was 0 of 5. So now, going forward, you have to think, if he was able to go through such a cold stretch without actually hurting the team that much, because the schedule was soft, they were able to beat these teams without leaning on him too heavily, is he going to be able to get hot in time to really help the team in games where they need it? Now, I think Saturday's Golden State game, for example, you know, anything can happen in a game of basketball. There's a reason they play the games. But these 2 upcoming games against Golden State, it's hard to see the Clippers beating Golden State, because it feels like Golden State always gets up for the Clippers. And the Clippers are a worse team than the Warriors are. And without Chris Paul, it makes it that much harder. So expectations are low. And that February 1st game against Phoenix, you should win anyway. But then you get into some tough games. At Boston, at Toronto, back-to-back. Those are two tough games. Those are two games where you probably are supposed to lose the game. But if Jamal Crawford has another 9 of 14 night for 27 points like he did last night, you can win at Toronto if you get that boost from Jamal off the bench. You can win at Boston if you get that boost from Jamal off the bench. At Charlotte, at Utah. Versus Atlanta, they play the Hawks again right before the All-Star break. These are the type of games that you probably aren't supposed to win with Chris Paul out. But you can win if you get that boost from Jamal Crawford, and hopefully Blake Griffin, you know, returns to form. I'm not too worried about Blake. It's his first game back in a month. He's going to be a little rusty, but going forward, I think Blake should be fine. And then you move into the first couple weeks of March. Houston, Milwaukee, Chicago, Boston, Minnesota again, Memphis, the 76ers, the Clippers just lost to. Utah again, Milwaukee again. These aren't easy teams. It's not a stretch where you're playing, you know, Dallas and the Lakers and the Suns. The Clippers need to find a way to win some of those games against good opponents, against opponents who, with Chris Paul out, have equal or better roster than the Clippers. And the Clippers, when the Clippers are fully healthy, they don't play a lot of teams with better rosters than they have. I mean, obviously the Warriors have a better roster. The Cavaliers have a better roster. But the Spurs don't, really. The Rockets don't. The Raptors, no. I don't think anyone in the NBA has a better healthy roster than the Clippers do, aside for Golden State and Cleveland. The problem is the Clippers have struggles. They struggle staying healthy and meeting their expectations. But now you're in a situation where you have a worse roster than these teams. At Boston is a game you should lose. At Toronto is a game you should lose. Jamal Crawford can lift the team over the top. And if he's able to lift the team over the top in those games, that's invaluable. Because him getting hot, you know, let's say the Clippers play these 10 games, and they played the 10 teams close. But you probably lose every game of that bunch by 6 to 8 points. Well, if Jamal Crawford can get hot in 6 of those 10 games, you could win 6 of them. And maybe you win a couple of the other ones anyway. And now you really start turning a stretch around, a stretch that could easily be 2-8, 3-7. You maybe start turning into like a 6-4 stretch, where 6-4 would... You know, I was talking to Matt Moore of CBS Sports on Twitter about this, and I said the maximum time the Clippers are going to miss Blake or miss Chris with this thumb injury, the last game that he would miss based on the timeline would be March 15th versus Milwaukee. That would put him out for a total of 25 games. I said, based on the projection of where Memphis and OKC are going to finish the season, if they win the same win percentage they were winning at, and the Clippers, who have a really easy last stretch of games after Chris is supposed to return, the Clippers, if they go 13-12 in these 25 games without Chris, I said they probably finish 5 games ahead of Memphis and OKC and avoid the 6th spot by 5 games. And Matt said, well, the problem is that you think they're going to go 13-12 without Chris Paul in the next 25 games. And that's fair. I mean, the schedule's tough. They could definitely go worse than 13-12. Right now, they've started 1-3. So already my 13-12 in 25 has become they need to go 12-9 in the next 21. And 3 of those games were against Golden State. So you're really talking 12-6 in 18 games, and it's 18 tough games. The only two bad teams that the Clippers really play in that stretch would be Phoenix and then the 76ers, who we just saw the Clippers lose to. Maybe Chicago, depending on how Chicago's season goes in the next month before the teams play. So it's a tough stretch. Maybe maybe 13-12 isn't possible. Maybe you look at their 1-3, they lose the three Warriors games, 1-6. And then in the other 18 games, maybe they go 9-9. So maybe you're talking 10-15 instead of 13-12. That's a three-loss swing. But it still, by my math, would put the Clippers a couple games ahead of the sixth seed. So I think what I don't know, it's too hard for me to gauge when you look at it. It's hard to see the Clippers dropping that far because Oklahoma City and Memphis are just, they're vulnerable. You know, it's easy to see the Clippers dropping further away from Houston because Houston, even though they're in a little bit of a rough patch right now with their dense schedule, they're fatigued, they've got some nagging injuries, Houston can rattle off a 9-10 stretch easily. Oklahoma City and Memphis are both very mortal. I don't know that Oklahoma City and Memphis are going to go on a crazy hot streak to pass the Clippers, and they would need a crazy hot streak to pass the Clippers. Now, I think what the Clippers just have to hope for is that Houston keeps losing. Houston's 5-5 in their last 10. They play at Boston tomorrow night, which is not an easy game. The Clippers are three losses behind the Rockets right now, so if the Rockets lose tomorrow, Clippers two losses back, two head-to-head games remaining, and then you just have to say, well, Houston has to keep slumping like they're slumping right now. They've got to lose games. You know, they lost to Milwaukee. They've got to lose games to teams like that. Not bad teams, but teams that they should probably beat. And the Clippers have to take care of business against teams like Milwaukee. That's why they can't afford a loss like last night's loss in Philadelphia. Because those are the type of things that add up. Houston has to lose games they should win, and the Clippers have to at least win the games that they should win. And then, because of their health situation, win some games that they shouldn't win in order to close that gap. Because I don't think the Clippers are ever, under the Doc Rivers era, I don't think they're ever going to deliberately tank beyond, you know, okay, it's game 82, we want this matchup, we'll slide one spot. But I think asking them to plan ahead and blow a 5-game margin because they don't want to play the Warriors in the second round. The team's already so psychologically broken against the Warriors. To tank your way down two playoff spots so you can go on the road against Houston in the first round just so that you don't have to play Golden State in the second round if you meet them there, that breaks a team, because then you're thinking, you know, I think everyone's on the outside, you know, everyone on the outside in the fan base and the media, all of us, we don't expect the Clippers to beat the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals this year. I don't think anyone ever did expect that. I think it would be nice, obviously, you know. I'll be there. I'll be happy if they win. But it's not something that I'm expecting. Or it even, like, hopeful for. Like, there's, for me, like, the best case scenario for this year, the best case realistic scenario is probably that the Clippers would have been able to get the 2 seed and stay healthy, and then go to the Western Conference Finals and see what happens when you get there, which is, fans speak for, we don't really have a shot. But from the Clippers' perspective, inside the locker room, you can't plan a 6-month season. You can't plan 82 games based around, let's try to beat everyone but these guys. You have to say, we're going to beat them. You have to be trying to win a championship. Otherwise, what are you there for? It's hard enough to stay motivated for 82 regular season basketball games when you think you're winning a championship. But if you don't think that you can win the championship, if your goal, if you're just admitting openly to each other, yeah, we're not going to beat the Warriors, how can you possibly stay motivated? And I think the problem is that the Clippers do a good job of convincing themselves they're championship contenders when they're healthy, because they beat up on bad teams, and they beat teams like the Spurs. They beat teams like the Cavaliers. the Thunder, the Grizzlies, you know, they play good games against these teams, even if they lose. And it's easy for them to convince themselves, yeah, we're right there. And then it seems like they always break when they play the Warriors and kind of struggle after that Warriors game because, like, the morale is so low because they just think, oh, man, we really don't have a shot. So are you really going to exacerbate that by saying, oh, we're going to throw games to avoid them because we're that scared of them? I just don't think it's practical. But it's good that we talked about that a little bit today, actually. It's good that we got into the Warriors a little bit because the Clippers now have 2 more days off, Thursday and Friday. Today off, of course, Wednesday. So 3 straight days off going into Saturday's game against the Golden State Warriors. Which means we've got plenty of time to talk about it. So we scratched the surface a little bit, but I don't know. Why don't you guys let me know on Twitter what you think the next couple episodes should be about? We could maybe go a little off topic tomorrow. You know, since we got 3 off days in a row, we don't necessarily have to talk about anything time sensitive. We can talk about lineup decisions or trade ideas or anything like that. And then Friday, get a little more into getting ready for that Warriors game. Or we can do a little bit of both days. But as always, you know, tweet at me your questions at Lucas J. Han. Send me emails, lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Let me know what you guys want to hear. You know, the show's here for you guys. And yeah, looking forward to hearing from you guys, having a couple good shows with the Clippers having off days. And it's a big game on Saturday against the Warriors, but if you aren't able to tell by how I talk about the matchup, it's something that I'm almost like over the rivalry. It just makes me angry to see that the Clippers can't compete against them. I just want to be done with it. I almost hate that we have 3 days off going into it because I just want like the game to come and be gone and have the next game and forget about it. And now because the Clippers play the Warriors, they have 3 days off, they play the Warriors, and then they play the Warriors again on February 2nd. So it's like, for 10 straight days, we're going to be talking about nothing but these 2 Warriors games. And it's depressing, so I wish it wasn't, the schedule wasn't set up that way, but that's how it is. So let's talk about it. Again, tweet me, email me. Let's figure out what we want the next couple shows to be about. All right, this is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers. ¶¶